Open public input. We have kind of shifted the order of this so that the public can testify, and then the director's report will take place. So we want to hear from the public now. We've got a few people who've signed up. I think you're all pros at testifying and know that we allow 3 minutes. When you hear the beeping noise, that means the 3 minutes is up, and we'd like you to conclude your remarks. So the first one up is Bob Lake. Welcome back, Bob.
Thank you. Chairman Wecker, I appreciate the time to testify for you people this morning. I want to just hit a couple points. I'm an advisor on the Grays Harbor Advisory Board for the new policy that was trying to put in place. And back about 18 months ago, you, Chairman Wecker, approached me about safe areas. And I suggested Grays Harbor as a safe area because of what happened on the Columbia River and everything. And I hope you still keep that in mind, because some of the things, I'm not going to hit on everything here, but there's a few things I would like to make you people think of when you get to presentation tomorrow about the whole product. A lot of the information I tried to put in was not put into it. And if you look at the sharing side of it, it's really bad. And the hatchery production, you're talking about increasing. Well, the legislature do that when we already have surpluses because we're not fishing enough to harvest those fish. And the other point I'd like to make with us on the commercial side, the gillnet side, our impacts on Chinook are far less than the recreational side, honestly, because if you look at the data we have and the whole works, and it is honest data, we've had observers on the boats, we've got very good people down in Region 6 that do just research, they've been on our boats. I've had numerous ones on my boat in different areas, and they are very accurate. And I think that another thing, that the sharing should be at minimum 50-50 on the non-treaty side, Washington Fishers, should be 50-50 on the Chinook and the Coho. We could turn around and alleviate that problem. We could get more fish for everybody, and we could support it if, in fact, you're willing to work with us and give us viable fishing time. We sat right here last year in this room, PFMC deal. We had a whole season set, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, we lost our whole early hump tulip season, which we would have harvested some of those surplus coho, as well as we would have harvested some Chinook over there. And that is why when we go into a meeting, we thought it was all cut and dried and everything was fine. And lo and behold, it was a 2-3 weeks later, we find out the whole thing was through a garbage can. We lost that whole early fishery. I put up a net that cost around $5,000 to put up that I couldn't even use. So, I mean, the expenses alone, you know. And I think that... I'm not going to tie you up with too much more, because we're going to have hopefully we're going to have a lot of the other members of the Grays Harbor Gillnetters and that up here to testify tomorrow, weather permitting. So I do appreciate your time, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Bob. You owe us donuts. We have a rule. You know, your cell phone goes off, you have to bring donuts.
How many dozen do you want?
Commissioner Schmidt, I'm just kidding.
Oh, I'm not. Commissioner Carpenter, a little wasting away to nothing.
Oh, yeah.
Wait, Bob. Commissioner Schmidt has a question or a comment.
Bob, I was curious about your comment about safe areas and including Grays Harbor. You know, I've heard discussions about the possibility of Willapa, and it does make some sense to me. I don't think it's been explored very far. Why Grays Harbor, and have you thought about Willapa?
Well, yes, definitely Willapa, too. That was a suggestion I made. I was talking to Grays Harbor today. I didn't want to bring Willapa into it. We have two different scenarios. Grays Harbor is a case area with treaty tribes. Willapa is not. And that's why I didn't want to commingle the two. That was why. But on the same token, we could turn around and make it, Grays Harbor could be a very lucrative fishery. We have two different licenses. Maybe I better do it this way. Grays Harbor has a Columbia River attachment on a license, and Willapa has a Columbia River attachment on a license. So theoretically, I've got two Willapa licenses and one Grays Harbor license. I've got three Columbia River licenses. That's why. And another comment on that, and something to remember, I understand the Lewis River had a tremendous surplus on Chinook this year. Maybe that's a safe area it could be looked at also on the Columbia, on the Washington side. We've got some real problems with Oregon in trying to figure out and where we can harvest fish because of where the boundary on the Columbia River runs. I know that. I don't really want to convolute this whole conversation. But
Bob, just one follow-up.
Yeah.
Is it accurate that all Grays Harbor gillnetters with permits also have a Willapa permit?
No. There's some that only have a Grays Harbor permit. And there's some, a lot of Willapa permits do not have Grays Harbor permits either. That's why. And it's
okay. Thank you.
No, thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Joe Ferdos.
Good morning, Commission and Mr. Wecker. Good morning, Mr. Holtzmiller. She's the only person I haven't met on the commission, so welcome to the commission. I'm representing the Puget Sound Pond Association and here to give a quick synopsis on the season and our perspective on what happened and what can perhaps be done into the future to change things. Essentially, to cut to the chase, my revenue was down 20% this last year. It wasn't down, that's dramatic enough, but it wasn't down double that because of the intricacies of how the policy played out, but the recreationals had an embarrassment of riches in Region 6, which is the San Juan Islands, where from previous years where they had 8,000 pounds to catch, they were given 30,000 or 33,000 pounds to catch, and we had 33,000 pounds to catch, and we were given about 8,000 or 9,000 pounds to catch. They're unable to catch their quota. They dragged out all through the summer, costing the department a great amount of money on flights to count 500 pounds a week that were being caught. And so we got about 17,000 pounds of that to catch because they were unable to catch it. To me, that points to a gentle way to say this. They've given them too much, basically, is what it comes down to in the islands and in this in general. It's where you're giving a shareholder or a stakeholder group so much that they can't actually find a way to use it in that area. They may be able to rationalize and say, well, next year we'll be able to catch more, but it's kind of forcing the issue, saying, well, we really want you guys to catch it, and you kind of got the spoon in there and you're saying, eat more prawns, come on, catch those prawns, damn it, you know, you can have. What makes sense to me is that really at some point during the policy discussion we were at 40-40, 35-75, 35-65, and then in the very last minute we went to 30-70, and that was came in and went through the Fish Committee and it was a done deal. But I think it's appropriate this time to reopen the prom policy and say, how did this actually play out? How did it come out? And what is actually an appropriate level and way to manage this fishery? That's essentially what I have to ask you to do.
Thank you. We, in our policy, called for an annual review, didn't we not? So when would that take place? Do you know offhand? Yes, Director Henderson.
I don't know offhand. My guess is it's in January, but I'd have to check with Jim Scott and Rich Childers, but you can expect to have a complete report.
Great. Okay. Yeah, we made significant change. We recognize that. And we made a commitment. We've always made a commitment to adaptive management. So I think we need to review.
Okay, I appreciate that. That's essentially what I'm here to say today. You know, I won't slam any doors behind me. And so, but I think it's entirely appropriate. The addendum I'd asked, I'd talked to as well, is we've talked with Commissioner Carpenter about a buyback for our commercial fishermen. I don't think that's going to happen because as much as the department needs an accurate count of recreational fishers, I don't think we'll be able to get them to pay for a buyout of the commercial fishery, even though I think it is appropriate when you see the allocation shift. But I don't think it's going to happen. And it's also somewhat disingenuous to say, well, the industry has to pay for it if they want it to happen, at the same time as cutting their revenues. And I'm like, okay, well, who can afford now to pay for their own buyback if you're not allowed to catch as much? So it's sort of a double whammy.
Commissioner Carpenter?
Joe, I appreciate your comments. I think there's this one thing that I understand the predicament that you're in. I appreciate what you brought to us, and we're going to review that. But, you know, the one thing to keep in mind about the recreational fishery and sort of the scope of how I think I and others may look at it, recreational fishing, whether it's for salmon or for shrimp or for crab, it's a meaningful opportunity. It's not the total poundage that is harvested. And I think there's a little different perspective. I don't present that to you as an eye poke, but it's about opportunity. The recreationals don't measure their success by poundage.
Okay. Well, it will be on our agenda in probably in January, if not then, soon after. So thanks very much.
Thank you.
Tom Davis.
Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity. Couple things I wanted to share with you. One is on the Skagit elk. Like first thank the director and Commissioner Carpenter for attending the Senate Natural Resources Committee hearing about a month ago and the commitment of about 4 hours of time for to hear a lot of different issues that came up. One of those was on the Skagit elk. The department's pouring a lot of resources into that planning effort, which we appreciate. Just let me back up. Tom Davis with the Washington Farm Bureau. So we have a lot of Farm Bureau members up there that are active in the Skagit elk issue. For those of you that live around elk and have them on your land, you know the frustration and the joy it is probably both to have them on there. Just thinking this morning, having elk around is like sometimes your mother-in-law, sometimes it's better. You enjoy them more at a distance than having them close to the house. And that's what, you know, our farmers are experiencing there in the Skagit. So they're getting a little worn out in the process, but again, I appreciate that the process is happening because it's allowing them to be involved in that. HPAs, there's the WAC proposal that you're going to get here, another hearing on today or a briefing on. There is a group of us, a coalition, counties, cities, business, that are coming back together again to look at the WACs. This process has been going on now for quite a while. We have some concerns, and so I just wanted to express that to you so that you that because there may have been silence on this in the past, that you may have thought there was support for the package. That is not the case, and we will be collectively, individually presenting comments to you and to the department on that, but wanted to make that clear for you as well. We have asked for a crosswalk, taking what the existing WACs are and what the changes are. About a year ago, we have been provided something that attempts to accomplish that, but we still don't feel like it's as transparent as it could be, and that is, here's the existing WACs, here's the specific changes that we're making, and you can see the difference, the changes from existing to new. And so we would appreciate more information on that, because obviously these changes will have a big impact to landowners. So appreciate the opportunity this morning.
Thank you.
And please don't tell my mother-in-law.
I was just thinking about doing that. Okay, that concludes the open public input item, and we can move into the director's